We can more or less classify people into two categories, those that like to take risks and those that don't. We see throughout our society all of this. Some people will take a job and be happy with a stable, predictable salary. Others will want to try something out, knowing of the possibility of failure and loss. But there's also possibility of success and gain. Naturally, there are a myriad of circumstances that can affect a person's willingness to take risks. For instance, a single person would be more apt to take a financial risk than a counterpart who is married with children. In the latter person's case, taking a financial risk not only jeopardizes the livelihood of that person, but also those who are dependent on their sound and prudent decisions. In today's readings, there are two women who take tremendous risks. Or are they? And what exactly are these risks? We are told that the woman in the first reading had a mere handful of flour left in her pantry jar, enough to make a small cake, hardly a satisfying meal for her and her son. And yet, when Elijah shows up at her door, hungry no less, he asks her for something to eat, telling her that if she does so, her jar will never go empty. Now, I cannot speak for you or what you would do, but I would be just a little skeptical of someone who made that claim. Who's to say that Elijah would have or even could have made good on his word? It was a risk, and the widow took that risk. In the gospel, we are told that another widow, without any bidding, put two small coins into the treasury. Like her counterpart in the Old Testament, the donation of these coins, while the text does not say so explicitly, was sufficiently high that she would have felt it materially. The difference in the second story is that there was nobody like Elijah to encourage her to do so. She did it out of her own volition. She did it out of the goodness of her heart, knowing that the needs of the synagogue and its mission came first. Our first conclusions regarding the heroic virtues of these two women were that they were giving the bulk of their net worth to the poor and the needy. And our reaction is, wow, that is so beautiful. But upon closer inspection of these two texts, the recipients aren't actually the poor and the needy. The recipient in the first story is Elijah, and while we want to cast him as a poor man, he's really a man of God, and men of God should not be wealthy or extravagant or anything too worldly. Now, the second recipient, the one in the gospel, isn't a man at all. It's actually the synagogue. And while we might want to say that the synagogue would distribute all of its collection to the poor and the needy, this isn't necessarily the case. Some portion, even a large portion, would be meant for the congregation and perhaps the upkeep of the synagogue itself. So you see, these two women weren't giving of their poorness to even the poorer or the more needy. They were giving to God. And it is with this distinction that I move into a very obvious change that we have made in the church. And you should have noticed it straight away. Now, flanking the high altar are two new images. The detail might be difficult to discern from way back in the church. That makes you Catholic. But perhaps after Mass, you might want to come forward and take a look and bring your kids. These images are taken from an altar of the Dominican Priory in Fiesole, just up the hill from Florence in Italy. Fiesole's most distinguished son painted the originals. Fra Angelico was his name, and he was a Dominican friar. He was, and still is, one of the most recognized painters in the world. But armed with that knowledge, you might be tempted to say, well, so what? And that's a very honest response. 800 years ago, the then Holy Father, Pope Honorius III, granted to St. Dominic the permission to form a religious order, the Order of Preachers. Because this permission came in the form of two different decrees with two different calendar dates, one in 1216 and one in 1217, choosing a suitable anniversary date became difficult. And furthermore, desiring that we give the occasion all the attention that it merits, the current master of the order declared and granted an entire year for the Dominican family, which includes friars, nuns, sisters, and laity in which to fully celebrate this auspicious event. 800 years is a long time. As you might already know, we Dominicans do things differently, if not oddly. While last week we had All Saints' Day, November 1st, that was Sunday, we Dominicans have a separate day entitled All Dominican Saints, which we celebrate on November 7th, which was just yesterday. And now you know why our high altar has two images depicting some of the Dominican saints of our order. St. Dominic could not have known that his little band of brothers and sisters would endure for 800 years, attracting hundreds of thousands of people to enter into his way of life. But it goes to show how God's generosity cannot be outdone. His name rings throughout the world. Countless parents have given him the name Dominic, or Domingo, or Dominique, to their sons and daughters. Cities around the world bear his name. He is, of course, not as famous as his contemporary, Saint Francis, but Dominic never wanted fame. In fact, in his humility, he wanted to be buried away from the public, in a place where the brethren would actually walk over him every day. He did not get his wish. And I told you we were a little strange. In addition to canonization and recognition everywhere, the Dominican Order has contributed much to our world. St. Thomas codified much of what we rely on for philosophical and theological truths. St. Albert the Great advanced the study of natural sciences. St. Raymond of Peñafort established canon law. St. Catherine of Siena brought the papacy back to Rome after years in exile in France. Dominicans have assisted the Holy Father in the role of papal theologian for 800 years. And Fra Angelico, who I mentioned earlier, advanced art from the medieval to the Renaissance periods. These Dominicans and countless more could not and would not have flourished had they not given of their poverty and not simply of their abundance, like the widows of today's readings. For like the widows, they did not give to the poor and to the needy. They gave themselves to the church. And indirectly, the poor have benefited tremendously, spiritually, if not necessarily materially. In recognition of our order, His Holiness Pope Francis has granted the possibility of anyone to receive a plenary indulgence simply by coming to a Dominican church, meditating for a suitable period of time in front of the Blessed Sacrament, and to fulfill the usual necessary requirements, such as receiving Eucharist, going to confession, and praying for the needs of our Holy Father. You already come here once a week for Eucharist, So of the conditions, you're practically there. Now, you might think to yourself, indulgence? Isn't that what the Reformation was all about? Aren't indulgences bad? Even the sound of indulgences might be setting off your alarms. Now, it is true that indulgences had a part to play in sparking the Reformation, but it was because there were some clergy, even some Dominicans, I dare say, who were illicitly selling indulgences rather than bestowing them as an offering for those that fulfilled certain spiritual requirements. You see, the church has the power given to it by Christ to impose or erase any temporal punishments due to sin. Now, you and I know we all sin. And by going to confession, we know that the sins are forgiven. But there's still a lingering price to pay for those sins. The price, as we understand it, is to do time in purgatory. This is the temporal punishment for the sins we have committed. And the ordinary way we get out of purgatory in order to enjoy the fruits of heaven has a price. And most commonly, it's through the prayer of others. And for this reason, it is important for us to pray for the poor souls in purgatory. Now, so, if we ourselves fulfill the terms of a plenary indulgence, then we spend no time in purgatory for all the sins that we have committed prior to the indulgence. It's like getting a get-out-of-purgatory-free card. Many people, however, have poo-pooed the importance or even the existence of purgatory in the past several decades, calling it a product of a superstitious, overly legalistic church. Yet our theology has not changed. Purgatory is still there on our theological books, even if many educators and religious instructors have not chosen to focus on it or even teach about it. Now, the parishioners of St. Dominic's in Benicia, as I have said, have a benefit that most people simply do not have. Our church is a pilgrimage church where you can receive this plenary indulgence. Most people have to travel great distances, even hundreds of miles, in order to reap the benefits of this particular plenary indulgence. Yet you already come here every Sunday, and some of you even daily. You could, with very little effort, acquire this most awesome gift, and many will do so by day's end. But even beyond the plenary indulgence, think about the scripture lessons that we have learned today. God's generosity cannot be outdone. While you might think that you are risking your material livelihood by giving everything to God, look what he has done for St. Dominic and his descendants. In my own past, I had everything that I needed and much more. I could have given out of my pocket change just as the scribes did, but that would certainly not have been like the women in today's readings. Instead, like my Dominican brethren before me, I gave up those things for something greater. And it was not a risk. It was not a gamble. For I am deeply blessed in more ways than I could ever imagine. And it is not just my opinion. My friends and family noticed it well before I did. The question is not so much about the risk, because it is clearly shown that God provides abundantly for those who make sacrifices for him in a particular way, such as the priesthood or religious life. And if you think you fall into this category, are you willing to take a plunge to make that sacrifice? our world is hedonistic, and our society tells us that we will be happy if we follow its tenets, to make tons of money, to defer our marriages, sometimes even indefinitely, to minimize the size of our families. Yet for many, this world doesn't offer what makes us or what will make us happy, unless we commit ourselves to God in a very particular way. For some of you, the question will be, can you give out of your poverty to assist God and his church? For others, and I suspect the bulk of you would be, the question, would you stand in the way of your son or daughter in their giving of their lives in this way? We want the church to be here for us, to give us the sacraments when we need them or when we want them. But are we willing to give it the ministers and prayer warriors that it needs to fulfill its mission? In order for us to be able to celebrate a jubilee in 800 more years, that answer has to be yes.